This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. United Auto Workers President Dennis Williams wrote an op-ed in the Detroit Free Press this week, attempting to make sense of a resounding loss for his union. In a vote late last week, nearly two-thirds of the 3,500 workers at a Nissan plant in Canton, Mississippi, voted against union representation, ending one of the most bitterly fought labor battles in recent years. The majority of Nissan's workers in Mississippi are black. And of all the manufacturing plants that the company owns worldwide, only the U.S.-based factories are non-unionized. The UAW poured huge amounts of resources into the union bid. Understanding why the vote failed so badly is key to organized labor's future. Joining me now is Mark Bayard. He is an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the director of the Institute's Black Worker Initiative, and he was the founding executive director of the Worker Institute at Cornell University. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
So in understanding why this loss happened for Nissan's Mississippi workers, how do you characterize the UAW's campaign? Because they poured, as I mentioned, a lot of their resources into trying to convince workers to vote to unionize. How do you assess what their campaign was like?
You know, it's... That's a great question, because it is difficult to assess, because the UAW started this campaign, almost 15 years ago.
Wow.
And it grew over the years in terms of the scope, and it really took off the last few years with a focus on worker rights being civil rights and really trying to appeal not just to the African-American community, but really understanding the important role that race and class play together. I think that the UAW did a good job in terms of building relationships with the community, whether it be historically black colleges and universities, whether it be the NAACP, whether it be African-American churches. I think that there was a lot of good work done. I think the reality of this campaign is that the employer, Nissan, was hell-bent in terms of making sure that there was no union in this plant, even though 42 out of 45 Nissan plants around the world do have unions. And I think the level of backlash from whether it be the governor, Phil Bryant, or whether it be what Nissan was doing to the workers in terms of captive audience meetings, one-on-one meetings, having management wear these vote no t-shirts, threats of moving the plant, conservative radio talking about how if people lose their jobs, there won't be other jobs. I think there was just an amazing amount of pressure that was put on the workers, and it made it a very difficult vote and not a fair vote.
Now, the op-ed written by UAW President Dennis Williams in the Detroit Free Press, he just wrote a piece trying to assess what happened. One of the things he cited was an indictment of one of the UAW's officials at the Chrysler National Training Center, where there was a problem with where there was a person who was indicted and accused of misappropriating millions of dollars for personal use. Was that incident something that Nissan exploited to try to tarnish the union? Because of course there is a corporate myth of union bosses as being these corrupt leaders who try to take advantage of poor workers, right?
Well, I believe Nissan used, everything in the kitchen sink in many ways. And yes, that particular indictment was used. I think also, painting the UAW as a major part of the city of Detroit's woes and economic issues and saying, do you want this to happen here, was also a major issue. I think a lot of the negative views of what unions or the myths of what unions have been in terms of corrupt entities or they're only out there to take your, you know, your wages, and they're there for the dues. I think all of those myths were used, all of those stereotypes were used to, and I think they're really just testing to see what's stuck on the wall. But no, obviously it does not help if an organization that is attempting to unionize a group of workers has at another facility or in another location some level of, you know, of corruption. But, you know, Nissan itself, I mean, we could go through Nissan's entire, you know, history and find issues where maybe their executives have done things and what have you. So the question is, what does that have to do right. with the vote at that particular plant? So I think the company used it, but I don't think that in reality it had anything to do with it might have had something to do how some of the workers perceived it, but I think the reality is that they're two separate issues.
And in fact, one of the things that the union president did say, just to kind of underscore what you were saying, is that he said, working people know that too often in America, corporations get away with systematic company-condoned misconduct, while a union that is fighting for working people gets vilified by those same corporations for the misdeeds of a few bad apples. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. You know, I was thinking the exact same thing, that this whole analogy of bad apples is a good one to talk about this. Obviously, any organization, the size and scale of unions or what have you, might have some issues. But overall, you know, unions have been there and have a great historic record of protecting and defending workers. And I do believe that the workers at Nissan would be better off if they did have a union today.
I want to play for you, Mark, and for our audience a video that was produced by UAW to promote why it was important for workers to vote for the union. And after that, we'll watch one of Nissan's video ads.
Treat Mississippi workers fair, treat Mississippi workers just, and allow them to have a voice in their workspace.
Everyone's scared. They're scared what's going to happen. They're scared they're going to lose their job. I'm scared I'm going to lose my job right now.
Beneath that shine is a bunch of afraid workers that are injured.
Workers and community leaders are finally speaking out against a company that had once promised so much. Workers are now demanding a voice at Nissan.
With a voice, we can help to make improvements in the safety in our plant. We can help make improvements in the quality of our vehicles. We can make improvements in the quality of our lives and our families' lives.
These workers are happy that Nissan decided to build a master plant in their community, happy that they've been hired, but they also want to have some control over what the contract and what this relationship is.
But this is about fairness. Everybody understands how important a job is, but also in America, being able to decide whether or not you want representation is a fundamental principle of civil rights, human rights, and in any democracy.
And you've been watching an excerpt of a video created by United Auto Workers as part of their campaign to convince Nissan workers to vote for union representation. That video featured the voices of Nissan workers as well as actor and activist Danny Glover, who supported them. Well, here is how Nissan characterized why workers didn't need a union.
Nissan have supplied job security for people right here in Mississippi. Nissan has created such a major change in the life of people. Before, they were fluctuating back and forth looking for jobs to come through the door and know the lights are on, the water is running, everything is fine. It is just superb when you can have the security of a job, especially here in Mississippi.
I've been watching an ad by Nissan ahead of the vote that took place in early August by Nissan workers to unionize with the UAW. Now, Mark, this particular ad painted this beautiful picture of how Nissan has made its workers' lives better. But is there a small grain of truth to that? I mean, aren't Nissan workers, you know, they're earning something on average, I believe it's $26 an hour with paid vacation. So, you know, is Nissan a relatively better employer than others?
Sure, and I don't think the argument that the union or the workers were making was that I think people are happy that Nissan came to the Jackson, Mississippi area.
Right.
I think many of the workers are very proud to be working for a company like Nissan. I think the workers are generally satisfied with the wages. I mean, I spoke to a number of workers personally, and the issues that they talked about were respect on the job, dignity on the job. There were questions about health and safety. There were questions about worker voice. There were definitely questions about benefits. Over the years, Nissan has reduced pensions, has stopped contributing as much to 401k plans, has played around with some healthcare issues. So the workers definitely had a number of issues. Yes, one could say relatively that Nissan is a very good employer for the state of Mississippi, given the wages. But this campaign was more than about wages. It was really about the workers having a voice and a say in the company. And I think that's what the workers were really fighting for.
The video is narrated by an African-American man, and a majority of Nissan's workers in Mississippi are African-American. Do you think Nissan played on some of those issues of race and class to convince its employees that it was working in their interests better than UAW was?
I think Nissan, just like the UAW, understands that the 80% of the workforce at the Nissan plant was African-American. The city of Jackson and surrounding areas are primarily African-American communities. So reaching out to the African-American constituency is essential. I think that is something that is understood. And I think both sides were vying for that. I think Nissan definitely played up also, maybe not so much in its public advertisement, but I think played up on the economic fears and insecurities that African Americans had in the area, and the fear that the company might leave, the fear that the company might close down, the fear that the company might stop leasing cars to the workers at a very good rate. I mean, I think all that played on the economic insecurity issues of the African American communities. And I think that is where, Nissan saw a point of leverage, is realizing that these communities, need these good paying jobs. And Nissan really pushed the envelope there.
Even if it didn't work in the end, how important was it for this push by the UAW to get support from the likes of Bernie Sanders, the Fight for 15 movement? There was a huge, as you mentioned, this is a long time campaign, but in recent weeks and months, you saw a lot of sort of solidarity, a lot of the hopes and dreams of the broader labor movement were kind of relying on this vote going through.
No, definitely. I mean, I think in some ways a victory at Nissan would have been, the labor movement's contribution to the resistance. I think in the broadest terms, I think there were a lot of hopes and dreams pinned upon the success at Nissan, because the thought was if you could, win at Nissan, then, not only would the UAW be strengthened, but other unions organizing in the South would be thinking about these things and really thinking about organizing more aggressively in the South. But the reality is that, the labor laws were definitely stacked against the union. And once they filed for the election, the reality is that the company had, 30 days to do basically anything that they could to scare and intimidate the workers. And they were, highly successful at doing that. So the labor laws are so skewed that people think election, people think free and fair elections. But the reality is that, union elections are very contentious. Companies fight tooth and nail. Nissan, again, despite the fact that 42 out of its 45 plants around the world have unions, its three in the United States do not. And they were very clear that was something that they want to maintain. And so it was a fight, but it was not a fair fight. The labor movement has to take lessons, has to take heart, has to definitely realize that the relationships built between the African American communities and the UAW are essential for any victory going forward. So I think those are the lessons that have to be taken into account. The relationships with the clergy, the relationships with the historically black colleges, the relationship with civil rights organizations, all of those things, you know, have to stay in place if the UAW and the workers at Nissan expect to have a union in the future.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought up this issue of the way the labor laws are written, because that is a huge part of the framework for any attempt to unionize, as it is for any worker in the United States. I mean, labor laws are really not written to benefit workers, as you might see in some other, say, European countries. It's any worker who's tried to sort of address any discrimination in the workforce, in the workplace, has had to, you know, I've been through that, has had to hit up against the reality of how poorly structured our labor laws are to actually protect workers. So you're saying that once it's been certified, the union only gets 1 month to basically directly campaign to workers. However, these workers have been working at their own plant for years, many of them, and the employer gets many more chances to sway them against the union vote. That's inherently unfair.
It is, because obviously the employer can do things on company time. The union really has to meet the workers outside of the factory, you know, in their communities. They're not inside. And, you know, we heard from a number of the workers that they felt, you know, they definitely felt intimidation, you know, when management and even HR was wearing these vote no T-shirts, you know, against the union. There were videos shown on a regular basis being anti-union videos. There were both group as well as one-on-one sort of captive audience meetings with workers telling them why they should vote no. I mean, there was a lot of pressure in that plant that makes it very difficult. And the UAW claims some of it was illegal, and I think they filed charges. But, you know, that could take months and months to be reviewed. And so, you know, the company also has the advantage of, even if some of these things were illegal, you know, justice is slow, the election is over. And so the overall issues around labor laws are critical, because it's really been, I mean, labor laws in the U.S. were, you know, updated in the 1930s, really. So it's been quite some time since labor laws have really been looked at, and unions have definitely suffered for that. So what's really required is both changes in labor laws, as well as really, you know, new and innovative and aggressive forms of organizing, right, in order for unions to actually, you know, be able to truly benefit the workforces that they want to benefit.
Now, the loss, the vote loss was quite dramatic. It was not close. More than 60% of the nearly 4,000 workers voted against unionization. Did the UAW deeply miscalculate how that would turn out? I think, you know, if there had been a close loss, people would have not been surprised. But such a loss was quite surprising.
No, you know, it was surprising. You know, I myself, you know, was very excited about the union vote last Thursday and Friday. And when I know when I checked my email Saturday morning and saw the results, you know, I was definitely shocked. I think, you know, there's a lot of internal work that has to be done, obviously, on the union's part to really understand if they had the numbers going in, if they had enough numbers when they filed. You know, there's various articles that are out there that I've looked at that have, you know, different debates around those kinds of issues. I think there definitely has to be an internal analysis on the UAW's part. There also has to be a deeper analysis with the community, because the level of intimidation that companies are going to put on workers, you know, has to be accounted for. And so you really have to try to build up your numbers when you go into these fights to the greatest extent that you can and inoculate the workforce, knowing that you're going to lose some members. But the vote was surprising. I mean, I'm definitely proud of the 1,300 workers who did vote for a union, because the level of intimidation that they faced was also quite great, and they still, you know, stood up. And I know that there are many others of those 2,000, you know, 200 who voted against the union, who, you know, some voted, you know, because of fear of job loss, you know, some voted because of intimidation, you know, so it's not as if all of those no votes were, you know, were hard no votes. I think that there's a lot of workers, you know, particularly a lot of African-American workers who are really concerned about their futures and, you know, heard what the company was saying and felt that if they, you know, if they didn't vote that way, maybe there would be some retaliation. So again, it's not a completely fair vote. So it's hard to know of those 2,200 no votes, you know, how many of them voted in fear.
And then let's also talk about the political context of this entire vote. We are in the era of Donald Trump, who has tried to score political points by going to factories where there has been imminent job loss, by actually appealing to the sentiments of the white working class, not the black working class. So how do you... how much of the fact that we have Donald Trump in the White House, you think, figured into this, or maybe it didn't?
Well, having President Trump in office has definitely not been, for at least the first 7 months now, a benefit to the labor movement. I think the changes within the Department of Labor, the changes within other agencies, have definitely negatively impacted workers. The fear that the National Labor Relations Board, where union elections are decided, could be influenced by the kinds of folks that the president would put into positions there. One can assume that those will have negative impacts on the labor movement going forward. So, in terms of structure, the labor movement is definitely in a bad place with this president. I think also, though, that the there have definitely been reports of racist activities, not necessarily being done by Nissan itself, but definitely appearing within the African American communities on radio stations, symbols of Confederate flags. So I think that there definitely was some additional racial intimidation that was stirred up, within the community as well. And I think a lot of that ties into some of the broader racial bias and intimidation that we've seen, from the Trump administration normalizing these activities and making these activities seem acceptable. So I think that the union and these workers were definitely somewhat connected in the crosshairs of this.
And then finally, Mark, the labor movement, organized labor, has made a deal with the Democratic Party for a very long time in order to gain political power. Right now, of course, the Democratic Party controls neither House of Congress nor the White House, and governorships in states around the country, majority are held by their rival party. Is it time for the labor movement to abandon its allegiance to the Democratic Party and try to cleave a third path? I'm not saying, of course, they should jump onto the Republican Party's bandwagon, because the Republicans wouldn't have them, but to kind of give up on trying to push Democrats to be more labor-friendly and to really carve a more radical path to the left?
Well, I definitely think it's time for the labor movement to definitely carve a more radical path. I think that, whether it be amongst the Democrats or Republicans, the labor movement has not seen phenomenal gains, in the last 50 years. I think that pitting one's economic hopes on political parties is definitely not the way to grow the labor movement. Obviously, if one has a good progressive governor or state legislator, that can have a lot of positive benefits to public sector worker unions. And obviously, progressive politicians like the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, who supported, the UAW and the workers 100%, that's wonderful. Having progressive politicians like Senator Sanders, support the union is great. So where there are progressive politicians who support worker issues, then I think that's a fantastic relationship and a fantastic marriage. I think that but for the most part, you have politicians who are neutral, too negative. And so I don't believe that the labor movement going forward can put all of its eggs in one basket in that arena. I think we have to really push from the ground up and really figure out ways in which we can build more relationships, be more connected to, some of the resistance work that is going on in order to really make mainstream labor issues, important, and to really get folks, just rank and file folks who may or may not have ever been a part of a union, to just stand up with labor, because they understand that raising the floor for workers and the working class benefits everybody. And I think labor needs to push a broader message that really does connect up with the moment that we're in, and really capitalizes on the energy that's out there to see, real social change now.
Okay, so the Fight for 15 movement, which is a movement primarily of workers of color, and has centered, say, on fast food workers in cities around the country, one of the things that they've done is put the fight for higher wages above the fight for a union, and they've made some pretty serious gains. A lot of commentators sort of criticize the SEIU for that approach, but do you think in hindsight, after this UAW loss in Mississippi, that what Fight for 15's that its approach might actually be the more effective one to break through for worker rights?
I think that we need a number of approaches, and I think what Fight for 15 has done, has definitely elevated the broader issues of working class folks and low wage workers to a new, much more public level. So whether you eat at McDonald's or Wendy's or Hardee's or any of these places or not, you understand that a person who's working should be able to make at least $15 an hour. And so by bringing that issue to the larger consciousness, I think that that's incredibly important because it really opens up the door to a lot of economic conversations. And people who can support the 515 can see the value in supporting a union, they can see the value in supporting other campaigns that raise and elevate worker standards. So I think what we really need to do is figure out broad-based appealed campaigns that are definitely multiracial and focus in on the importance of elevating workers overall. Because if we can raise that floor, we can really get the community involved. You change it from just being a fight between a particular worker or a particular workforce in a company to a much broader community struggle. And where the community says, hey, we want the actors in our community to all be respected and to all be treated equally. It's hard to lose when you have the community behind you, I guess is what I would say. And the Fight for 15 has done a good job of doing that. And other campaigns definitely have to realize that we've long since moved beyond sort of bread and butter issues. And by engaging the community first and foremost and having them as an ally, it definitely increases your chance of winning, and it definitely increases your public perception in ways that no, general PR campaign could. So it's incredibly important to have the community and behind your back.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and putting this issue into context. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Mark Byard. He is an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the director of the Institute's Black Worker Initiative. He was the founding executive director of the Worker Institute at Cornell University. And we've been talking about why Nissan workers in Mississippi overwhelmingly voted against union representation. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.